sailed a bucktail over me. Worn out retrieves, they won't catch me. I wonder why they cannot see. Inside my weeds, I wait to feed. Folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast, a Jay Bird.
Steve, what's happening?
And it's heating up. It's that hot January Muskie bite. This is freaking
sarcasm or what's going
on? No, it's
there?
Good. It's just, it's not hot. I can.
It's not hot.
The bite, I'm dialed in, but I'm freezing to death. So that was exciting today. Little 20 mile an hour blow, 31 degrees, just fun, just plain old fun for the whole family. So anyway, guys, apologize. We were a day late and a dollar short from last week. Had it just got slammed there. So apologize.
Looking for it.
Yeah.
It isn't there yet. So,
maybe one of our pet gerbils died. Who knows?
So these things happen.
Oh my God, it's just never ending. Getting ready for, I guess, the illustrious show callers start rolling out here soon for people, and it's we've gotten the tiniest break from new stuff. Believe it or not, there are comings and goings at the Muskie Shop.
Yep. Which it's that time of year.
Yeah, already. Year. Yep. There's so much cool stuff. I mean, I think, to be honest with you, got in the habit there for a minute where there was not a lot of stuff coming out. So it's like, well, and now it's okay. I don't know if it's that there's so much coming out or we're back to normal where, okay, people are producing and pumping out stuff. And then, you know, I think something that's going to be impactful, you got the Muskie Frenzy, the Ringer. There you go. He showed up with those. You got the 8 mm-hmm. and the 8-9. Those are looking good. Do you know if he's going to do any staggers on those, Jay?
Those are staggers.
Oh, yeah, they stagger already. Blades. My apologies.
Yep. So ringers.
Me
yeah.
Done.
Yeah, and they got rubber colors
okay,
in
eight,
them.
Nine.
And, yep.
Yeah.
And all those are in. Yeah.
What's the 8? Is it an 8, like 8-7, or what's the configuration? 8-7. There you go.
Yep. Exactly. Yep.
You got that. You got
double Colorado blades. Yeah. It's got that special thing on the sleeve. Like there's a slot in the sleeve that. It just creates a ringing sound, so that's how he got the name, obviously. It's got a different squeak and noise, so that was thoroughly tested, and that's his new deal. I mean, he's been pushing that hard, so...
Cool.
Yep.
Got some different stuff there. They're all the flashaboo, it looks like. Now, there's a rubber core in there.
Yeah, there's 6 rubber colors in not only the ringers, which are the new one, but
right.
the standard really good sellers okay. over the last 2 years, like the IC7.
I commend them for one thing and one thing alone. Not doing a separate rubber core series. So you can just go in there, okay, do I want to, you know, it's not like the ringer rubber core. That's what usually happens. So rats off to them.
Right, there you go.
Rats
there you
off
go.
To you, sir. No, yeah. That's cool. I mean, and if you're wondering... Say, hey, you're not sure what that means of what's the difference in the rubber core, whatever. You get a little, the rubber skirt has a little more weight to it in a one-to-one compare. If you reel at the exact same speed with the two different skirting materials, the rubber core is gonna weigh just a little bit more, just an incremental increase in running depth. It's usually not too dramatic, but it's generally a smaller profile. And that's why
it is a smaller. Yes. The profile of the bait. Yeah. Yeah. Totally different flow to it.
The skirt lays way down opposed mm-hmm. to the flashaboo. And that is kind of one of the, I believe it or not, I do throw bucktails. Not often.
Well, I know you do. We all do.
But when I do, I tend to try to go with those alternative skirting materials quite often, whether it be marabou, if it's on a really shallow bite. But rubber core, that's kind of slept on. Not enough people were thinking about that. Because it is, I mean, it's just a change up in profile. Your flashaboo's got a lot more movement to it. But that's you know, not that I'm going to come jumping out of my skin for it. But if I was going to grab one of these, I would probably grab, you know, whatever color. Do you want dark or light? Let's get that out of the way. Okay, so.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be cool if I was doing this, grab one that's a flash and then one's a rubber core as a follow-up, because you can actually sometimes get the bite there. Whatever, down a rabbit hole on that. What do you got here? Cass Lure Company Journeyman 8.5. What are we looking at here?
Yeah, high that thing. I mean, brand new. Yeah. Story on that thing is that we got a few samples last fall, really late. I mean, like ice was forming up.
Right.
And Jim was the only one at work that got to take it out because he was still getting his boat out real late, you know. And, you know, Jim and Jim being the owner and John his brother, love to break ice. I mean, they love to break ice. And they love to shovel snow, too.
Right.
So you got that going for them. But so, he tried that. And it's like, yeah, really, really shallow diving. You know, hardwood, you know, multiple layers of clear coat and all that. Anyway, this guy, Paul from Minnesota, has just contacted us, me, I guess. And, you know, he's like, can I send you a few samples of a new bait I'm working on? Sure. You know, and he did. And I'm like, what are you calling it? And he's like, I don't know. Okay. Yeah. What's the name of your lure company? I'm not sure yet. I mean, they're literally that new. So last week, anyway, long story short, we got the information over there. He's like, I got them done. You want them? I'm like, send them over. They look great.
Cool.
So here you have it. Yeah. Talk about just small batch. I mean, ultimate small batch.
What is it? Like a wake bait? What is it?
A wake bait? It's,
what's it running?
It's an aluminum lip, very shallow diving, casted. It's like 1 foot, 2 foot, almost like those SS shads, you know, because it's got that deep body cut to it. So, of course, they'll troll deeper than that. You know, he says five to eight or something like that, trolled, you know, with like 30, 35 feet of line out.
So. Okay, so a shallow water crank is what you're looking at there. Very cool. They look spiffy.
They do.
They look clean, you know? Can't ask for more than that. We'll have to check those out there. Freaking, hold on, what is that? Oh, people with the phones. Anyway, what else is going on? It looks like you got some Meeps custom orders coming up there, which is cool. Anything else? I know last year everybody went kind of ballistic on the Meeps stuff coming out. Well, we got
Yeah, they've got a little thing going with some custom colors, and they're going to be promoting that next week. So next Friday, we've got them, and we can start selling them next Friday.
Yeah, very cool.
Super cool Meeps colors. They sure were popular last year. At the bash, we had that swamp gas. Remember that thing?
Yeah, that was cool.
So, just a little neat deals from Meeps. And also the catalog. I don't know. I didn't tell you. That went to the printer on last Friday. So that's done, thank God.
Yeah.
And
the proofing. Yeah, I heard that was done.
No, so, you took a look at some of the proofing.
No, Jordy, I just heard editing. Yeah, I just knew she was doing it. So,
yeah, good, clean fun, let me tell you. So, look for that in your mailbox, you know, early February. So it'll mail out after it gets done from the printers. It will mail in late January.
There you go. So, yeah, if you bought something last year, correct me if I'm wrong, if you've purchased something in the last 12 months, there's no need to sign up. Is that correct?
That is correct.
There you go. So if
you're on the mailing list, you'll get one free.
Right. And so if you give it time, folks,
Please give it time. Yeah. They go bulk mail.
Right. Which is, it's free. And the shipping is expensive. So yeah, it goes bulk. It'll take a minute. You know, let's not get freaking out. They will show up in the mail. Maybe your neighbor stole it, okay, if you don't see it after a while. But everybody freaks out. It was just a good thing. I love the catalog. It's a bright spot in my mailbox, you know? You got nothing else in there. You got bills. You got we buy houses for cash. I don't know what that's all I get in the mail.
Yeah, how many
anymore.
Positive things you get in your mail these days?
Get power bills and people trying to buy houses. That's it. You know, right. Maybe who knows? We buy houses, and then it'll be like the scary thing is this. Got my first AARP letter in the mail. Yeah,
it's right around the corner, Stevie.
No, it's not. The corner's far away, but close, close enough. No rest for the frickin' wicked.
You got an AARP letter. It's not too early to sign up, Mr. Paul.
Yeah, get a jump on it now, you piece of shit. They probably saw me walking back from the boat. Jay is what it was.
Yeah, they're like, hey, there's that guy. What's his address?
70.
Exactly.
Yeah, cripple.
Qualify.
He'll qualify. He looks like he can't walk anymore. 'Tis the season for me, at least.
Somebody saw you walking back into the house.
It's freaking, oh, you get off the boat in this. I got, listen, not to brag.
You're arching your back trying to straighten out of your cold. And listen, you know.
This is a non-paid endorsement for copper fit knee braces, you know. So it's just like, you get out in that, man, I get out in the cold. I'll tell you, I'm going to be the first man to die from a case of trolling motor knee. That's what it is. That's freaking pushing 30 years. And what, it's not now because we have the servo motors in our trolling motors. But what killed me was the years of running motor guide tours, right? So we finally got high enough pelt. We finally got 80-pound thrust trolling motors. This is back in the day, folks. But you were manhandling it, right? So turning it, you, if you remember, you old heads know exactly what I'm talking about. It's cable steer, so if it wants to go left, you're jamming your foot back and forth. Killed myself doing it day in and day out. So whatever, aches and pains and whatever. But anyway, I figured it's time to talk cold water. It's this point, and we're gonna get our good friend Danny Herbeck on the horn. Well, look, folks, who we found in the dumpster behind Tim Hortons, if it isn't Danny Herbeck. What are you doing, Danny?
Hey, man, what's going on?
So he was back there chewing on some Timbits.
They're pretty hard to pass up.
How's the weather in the Great White North there?
We've had a little bit of a warming trend up here. I mean, we don't have... I've seen worse winters, let's say that. We got, 16, 20 inches of snow on the ground, but we haven't had the real big deep freeze like we normally have by this time of year. So overall, not that bad, but it's winter and there's no open water. So yeah. That's the problem.
When does ice fishing kick off for you? I know you do a bit of that.
I usually get rolling, pretty hot and heavy. End of February, beginning of March, and then roll right through till the middle of April. I would say, second week of March to first week of April is probably the hot and heaviest time, but just the end of winter overall, I would say.
Gotcha. Is it even possible to do it right now, or is it just, not worth it?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, with the weather we've had lately, yeah, I mean, it's beautiful. Out there now, there is a bit of slush that we've had to contend with here. Just the way with the warm up and the snow load we have on these lakes, it's kind of
no doubt that much snow, right?
It's kind of miserable out there now. I hate to wish it upon us, but we do need some severe cold to kind of tighten everything up and freeze all that slush, and then we'll be good to go for sure.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Well, what was I want to gab. I want to gab with you about kind of the cold water period, because I know, as you're wrapping up your musky season, that's not too far removed from what's going on for people fishing, when you have open water and open season, right? So whether it be in the south and there's some different waters, we've been getting hit up a lot this last couple of weeks from people asking about tiger muskies, which is slightly different but close enough for jazz. Because you have some of those western waters, you got that. What you deal with in Canada right there before it wraps up, it kind of pertains now. But before we kind of go down that rabbit hole, how was the season overall? Like, what was your vibe?
Overall, it was a great season. I mean, I caught, a couple really, really big fish. I caught a couple of that legal plus, so 54 inch and above style fish.
Mm-hmm.
I probably had more... more 50 inch and above fish this year than I've had in a lot of years. Overall, it was really good. Numbers were really good. Right now I would say is the pinnacle. The last 3-4 years is like the pinnacle of musky fishing on Eagle Lake from, my whole time growing up with, number of fish we're catching anyway.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So, to kind of start the ball rolling here with this cold water stuff that you were talking about, I mean, I'm starting to learn a little bit more. I mean, we're getting to be able to fish later up here than we ever used to, just the way the falls have been coming in, these long, drawn out, mm-hmm. Falls without real cold snaps coming into them. So, we're able to fish into middle of November up here, which, back in the day was not possible.
Yeah,
I mean,
doing it, yeah.
And you know, I was fishing with water in that 37, 38 degree mark, which that's the coldest water I've ever fished in was this year. And I was actually shocked, you know, on how responsive the fish still were and, you know, and how many fish we were catching. That was, you know, in middle of November this year.
Yeah, once you hit kind of that benchmark, which is, I mean, yeah, that's crazy cold. You know, when did you see, say, we're coming out of the fall, we're dropping out of those 50s. When did you first see a behavioral change? Like, was it, you know, you drop below, because 55, it's kind of,
I would say 50, yeah, 54, 55 is where you start seeing that first change.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then I would say about that 44, 42 degree mark is like your secondary change, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that really shocked me this year was how shallow a lot of these fish still were, even with that really cold water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of the fish were right up on the rocks. You know, you're getting bit, like, you know, your bait would hit the water one, two pulls and you'd get bit. And maybe it was just the way that this year stacked up, because there was still a lot of Cisco's and whitefish up spawning with those colder temps. And I think those fish were just up there, you know, munching on them, right?
Right. Did you see a difference in staging before that spawn started? Were they hanging out deeper?
Yeah, for sure. The fish were spending very little time right up, like you had maybe, you know, a half hour, 40 minutes right at first light to get those fish up on the rocks. And then the rest of the day they were out in the mud, you know, in that 18 to 22, 23 foot zone, you know, not far from structure, but they definitely weren't up on the rocks. And that was, I mean, when you start talking cold water periods, you know, it's so bait related, because these fish aren't, I don't feel these fish are moving around as much as they do in the summer. And they, you know, they get in little core areas that the bait is in, and they might be making, you know, 100-yard movements a day type deal versus, you know, in some lakes up here, they're making miles of movement some days, you know, but, you know, they could if, you know, a lot of times.
Yeah, one thing I'm kind of, because we're, you know, high 40s kind of zone right now, and it's just like when I hit, you know, 50, like you said, 55 is a whole different animal. You get below that and that staging changes. But I think that I see more of a consolidation of bait fish at 51, 50, 49. Like, did you see the same thing where, it, like, the bait density across the basin or across the area was, like, far more compressed? Or is that...
Oh yeah, for sure. It's just, there's, you know, it seems like everything kind of gets into its staging period for, you know, the winter, and that's where they're going to stay, right? And, you know, those muskies, like, one thing I noticed too, like, in the fall, you got to think, right? Like, a lot of, like, where our whitefish and Cisco spawn are out at the, you know, rocky points. There's some main lake stuff out there, too. But a lot of them are rocky points at the mouth of, like, big bays and stuff like that. And those fish, like, I was seeing big groups of muskies. You know, there would be four to 10 fish on, you know, one shoreline-y, rocky projection. And those fish were there. Well, one, the Ciscos and Whiteys were there. But that's also, like, it kind of all started ringing a bell, like, I was noticing, is it's in very close proximity to where they're going to spawn in the spring. They're already thinking about it.
Yes. That's insanity that you say that, because it holds true even down here, which is... The key areas are not far from the spawn, but they're bait related, right?
Yeah.
Which is,
I mean, don't get me wrong. You could go out on the main lake, and there was, you know, there was Cisco and the Whiteys out there, and there was fish out there to be had. But when not you encountered like these, not the densities, exactly.
Not the density. And I not to cut you off, I had a freak out kind of moment. Again, you know, you and I talked about, especially with scope, seeing these pairs, right? Twice this week. Have gotten a big one in the net, and there's a shorty, I'm guessing on scope, let's call it upper 30s, low 40s right there already, right? Yeah. And these are, there's no doubt, like one was like a fat 47. Yeah.
You see it all year.
All year, and it's like, just like, okay, nothing changed, right? The temperature, the water temperature, that fish comes out. You know, I've pulled this muskie off of your classic kind of combo stuff, hard rock structure, muck adjacent, you know, that kind of deal, access to the deepest water, blah, 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 blah. Here it comes. There's that fish suspended off the boat, you know, might be 150 feet off the boat, but there it is, kind of followed that fish out and waited. Which is, it's funny that you noticed, or you saw the same observation though, about the density in proximity to the spawning grounds.
Yep. And it's, you know, it's one of those things you don't really think about it till you see it time and time and time again. And I mean, there's other factors that play, you know, wind direction, you know, and this and that, but it wasn't just, you know, a one-off. It was definitely, you know, there are certain key areas where, you know, it's funny that you catch those fish as soon as muskie season opens on these same general areas. And then when muskie, about the time you can quit, they're there again. So, and you know, there's a big shallow spawning bay just, you know, back in there or just around the corner. There's something to it that these fish are already staging up, and that's where they're going to spend their winter. And they're right there when things get right in the spring. They don't have to move very far, and they're doing their thing.
Yeah, I couldn't argue with that. Yeah, just from the standpoint of, you know, tuck it. It's like they tuck it into a small area, and they're not roaming. I mean, when from your perspective, I think I know the answer to this, but just to answer, which is, what I'm seeing is that the compacting of bait, the compacting of population density of muskie, meaning you got to find these areas because there's a hell of a lot more dead water than there's possibly productive water.
100%. And that was the frustrating thing this fall, or like in the last couple falls that I've kind of started to figure this out, is that, you know, you go into this, say it's, you know, it's an arm of the lake, and you know, you fish this point. I start working my way in this point. You fish like three or four spots, and there's, you know, some bait, but there's nothing. You don't see any fish, nothing. And then all of a sudden, about the time you're ready to pull the pin and start going, you wheel into that next point, and there every fish in that whole area is on that spot.
Yeah.
And then, you know. And so then, you know, I would start kind of triangulating in my head, okay, I'm this far back into this bay, you know, another couple hundred yards that goes from that, you know, 20-foot basin, it jumps up to that 12, 8, you know, 10 foot, and then it flattens out. That's how far I was running into all these other parts of these bays, right? Mm-hmm. It'd be like when the basin starts to deepen, that's where those fish were staging up. And like I said, all those fish, they would all be jammed up in one or two spots in that whole area. So then you could start, you know, and then I would start like looking around and try and find new stuff. But that is the time when you start really paying attention to your moon, your major, your minor, all that. Cause you know where that big pocket of fish is, and that's when you can catch 3, 4, 5 fish in a really short period of time, and you're not wasting any time running between spots. Right. 'Cause you know, okay, I encountered these fish here. They weren't really doing much. Let's leave them alone. Let's not pester them. We're going to slide in when we have moon. And that's when you get, you know, 2, 3, 4 bites in a 20-minute window. You know what I mean?
Yeah. On that tip, you know, 'cause I'm kind of living through it you know, about my millionth winter in a row, that period and seeing that consolidation.
Well, especially in cold water, your feeding windows get so much smaller.
Tight. Yeah.
And people get so hung up on finding a group of fish and just pestering them and bugging them and keep pounding on them. And don't get me wrong, that does work. You do pick off one here, one there eventually. But when you're looking for these big, insane bite windows, you got to come back on fresh fish, unpressured fish that haven't been bothered. Mm-hmm. And you can come in and do it right. And you can, you know, like I said, you can get 2, 3, 4 fish in a really short amount of time.
With that, I think a lot of that, too, is when you're coming into that window, and I don't know how you approach it, but, you know, if I'm hitting that window, I know the fish are there, right? Is hitting that window, but making sure I got enough variation in whether it be how I'm retrieving, I got variation in my boat control, controlling my casting distance and my target depth until you get that bite. But the way I got to do it is I have to do all of that inside that bite window. Right. Not trying to figure out, oh, they're sitting at 8. You know what I'm saying? Because once you know these fish are there, I think you can harass them where they're not going to bite during that window. You know what I'm saying?
100%.
You can
100%.
You can overplay
them. If let's face it, a fish is only going to follow a bait, you know, so many times before it completely loses interest and just completely leaves the spot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and one thing I have learned that if there is a muskie that is remotely active, it's going to follow whatever you throw in front of it to some sort. You know, it's going to follow it to whether it's going to bite it, whether it's going to come to the boat where you can actually see it or not. Mm-hmm. It's going to follow it to some extent.
Give it a look.
And what you're doing is you're just pulling those fish off.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So the minute you kind of start seeing like a big group of fish, I like I said, I peel out. Unless I'm there when I want to be there.
Right.
Unless things are happening. But if they're not happening, instead of, you know, in the fall, everybody slows down and they camp on stuff. Mm-hmm. I peel out and I start, you know, kind of poking around until, you know, all of a sudden, you know, I pull up the Muskie 360 app. Oh, yep. Major's in 10 minutes. Well, I know where I got to be.
Right. And you're thinking so that way ahead of time. Yeah.
Yeah.
In the negative aspect is when you pulled that fish, when that fish peeled off during a non-active time, that was the negative, that has negative impact on that. Discuss.
Well, you got, you got to think, right? So you're pulling the fish off of where he wants to be sitting. And next time you go to fish it, where's he at?
He's been harassed.
Not on the spot.
Which is the thing that I'm kind of dialed in on right now, which is it'll drive you nuts, is you got a close proximity. You have to make the cast. It's not cast and blast. It has to be the right cast because it's going to be one boulder or it's going to be one dip and it's going to be this one change, right? They're there, one or two of them at a time, right? And like I think what Danny's saying, what I see and just comparing notes, you move him off, and then he does the same thing they do in summer. He's going to hang out in open water, right? And it's like, if he even goes back to that, and this is the thing, it's flat
100%,
out.
100%, and that's the thing.
Because a lot of fish do not go back. A lot of them go to open water.
Depending on their attitude, right? Mm-hmm, active fish typically go back.
Yep.
You know, if they're not real fired up, they just keep sailing.
Yeah,
you pulled him off the couch. Now he's going to look for a new one,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, and essentially, I think the way I conceptualize it, Danny, correct me if it's different for you. Is like, had you not moved that fish, most likely, if you know, like he should be there,
right?
And he's staged there, and he's not going very far. Don't move him now. Move him when you have low light, or move him when you have solar lunar advantage, or you got something's changing instead of just, oh, there's nothing going on. And for me, the number one way to tell that is, okay, is it the major? Is it the minor? Is it sunrise? Is it sunset? What is it? I'm watching scope and I'm watching for bait fish activity. For me.
Well, that too. But
yeah,
you can
something
also
will tell
start,
you what's going on. Yeah.
Well, and you can start to tell, like, I'm pretty spoiled up here. Like I have a lot of fish per acre. So there's very, very few times in the day where I feel like I'm not around mm-hmm. fish.
Right.
And you can start to gauge when you start, like you can start to kind of get a feel for when you need to get serious and you need to start fishing hard and fast. Cause all of a sudden you'll get like, you know, a lazy scope follow. The fish doesn't come up to the boat. He just kind of keeps sailing underneath. All of a sudden, oh, you get a follow. He kind of comes into the eight. All of a sudden, oh, you get another follow. Oh, he goes around 3-4 times in the eight. All of a sudden, boom, you get a bite. So you can, and that's not like minute wise. That's kind of like hourly. It's yeah. just, you can see mm-hmm. the slow progression leading into it. And all of a sudden you're like, okay, well, it's go time, baby. We need mm-hmm. to be where we need to be because it's sure. it's happening or it's going to be happening,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Yeah, then that goes back to the time. Like you said, the bite windows are so tight. It's like, it's funny you say that. Like, where I'll have my, I did it today. I know where I'm going to hit when it matters, right? That's it. This is kind of like, I know everything. I know they're there. Everybody's there. I'm spending the rest of my time playing in other areas where I know there might be a couple or there might be one. Gauging exactly what you said, Danny. Okay, there's the deep, lazy follow 10 feet behind a swim bait, right? Fish ain't going to hit. You know, you put a move on him and he doesn't do anything. And then exactly what you're saying, okay, now he's up to the boat. You might be able to see him with your eyeballs, but he came up to 8 feet and he's swirling around on a bait. Which is essentially using electronics and using other, like, you want to catch all of them, but using other opportunities to calibrate based upon, okay, this is when I need to fire off on my A-grade stuff, you know?
Yep, 100%.
Do you have, like, when you're doing that, right? Because it's almost one of those things of, like, if somebody's out there and they're trying to get dialed in and they go, well, I don't even know where the A-grade stuff is, you're going to have to just, you know, burn everything and then prepare for the next day, because once you find them, I think in that cold water period, like, they're not going far, right?
No,
they're not.
No, they might be, you know, 100, like up here, it's different. Like when we're talking cold water, like I don't get, you know, a whole winter of cold water and to get these fish past, you know, the whitefish and Cisco spawn where they're right. just basically like you're fishing them where they're in essentially a dormant stage mm-hmm. almost. It's, you know, you're fishing them in the stalemate stage where yeah. they're
just now doing absolutely
nothing, waiting for the spawn right now is what basically you're fishing them in.
I get to fish them
where they're in the last big, you know, feeding craze before the deep freeze hits, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Where was I going with this now?
Steve calls that the feedback period.
Yeah.
Freaking, we're in the freaking, these fish are on Ozempic for 2 months is what we're calling this. They're going, no, nuh-uh.
Yeah.
This is.
But you would be surprised, like, on those fish, you know, everybody thinks they're going to be just on the cream of the crop. Mm-hmm. And typically that's where the biggest one is going to be sitting. But like when these Ciscos and Whiteys are spawning, they're not just spawning on these, you know, points. They are, but they're all the way up and down the shoreline leading up to it and just after it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like say you're fishing the windy side of that shore leading up to that point and they're not there. Well, they didn't go very far, and what I find time and time again is, whoop, they're just around the corner in the slick, mm-hmm. in the flat calm.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I see it time and time and time again, especially in the fall. I don't like to fish the wind. I fish the calm. Now, the wind isn't very far away. Like, the wind might be hitting this shoreline, and I'm fishing a big point or an island, and then you wrap just around that point, and there they all are.
Yeah.
They're just chilling. You know what I mean? It's not that they're not active. They're just, and they'll still eat. They just are tired of fighting the wind. Like, I am getting to believe more and more year after year that muskies are lazy.
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, you and I have done that together, and there's been time I've been on the boat with you in Canada where you called the shot. There'll be one around that corner. You know, we're up on the goon or wherever it is, and it's just like winds howling across it. What did you call it? In the flick? You know, it's just like right. Yep. I mean, it's a two body length area where it's just there's a flat spot. Boom, there they are. You know, yep.
I've just started, you know, probably in the last 8-10 years, really started fishing more calmer water stuff. Mainly because I'm getting tired of getting beat up. But what really keyed me in on that was Lake of the Woods. Mm-hmm. And when I started fishing over there, I was fishing it like I did Eagle. I was fishing in the wind all the time. And you would always see all these boats. They wouldn't even, like, you would look at the windy side of an island, and it looked beautiful. They would blow by all that, and they'd tuck in behind the wind, and that's where all those fish sat. Mm-hmm. And I started, you know, incorporating some of that into Eagle, and it holds true. Like, you know, especially after you get, like, a big blow for, like, 3-4 days, that's when you really start to see, like, you know, those little calm spots on, you know, proving very productive. Is it allows those fish to get over there and set up, and sit there. It's you when you get more, you know, of a stable wind for 3-4 days, that's when they really shine.
Yeah. When you're saying like in this cold water stuff and in the late period, let's say you have musky and a target area identified, right? You know, this is X, Y, and Z, and say pretend you're a weekender, right? You got Saturday and Sunday. You go out Saturday, you move a couple, right? Nothing happens, and then the weather changes, and there's a little bit more of a drop. Where you look, like, if you're not moving those fish in those primaries, for you, have they gone out further on the mud? Or where are they going? What are they doing? What's the transition?
You know, it's cold and you have a cold front kick in on you when it's already cold, yeah, I'd be sliding out deep.
Yeah.
I'd be, you know, and even then, you know, I wouldn't be afraid to even troll. Mm-hmm. You know, am I trolling 3 miles or 3.5 miles an hour? No. I'm trolling, you know, 2.2 to 2.5 and, you know, just covering water then until you can find, you know, a group of fish out over mud or find where the bait went or something like that. And even then, once you do find that, if you can find, you know, like a pocket of fish out in the mud, switch over to like some jigging type stuff.
Yeah.
Get right in their face and thump it on their head.
Yeah.
Or if you have the option, live bait.
Yeah.
And soak some live bait and just kind of mingle around, you know, at, you know, barely moving, trying to keep that stuff, you know, underneath the boat and just let it naturally swim around and let them look at it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's tough. I bring it up because it's a tough bite, but I think it was last episode we kind of talked about, maybe whatever episode I brought you up, because I was talking about the slowest trolling muskie I've caught, right? And I know at one point you were doing some stuff out over the mud with
line throughs and paddle tails, doing like 1.7 to 2 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty wild. That was like right at turnover when those fish were starting to kind of slide out in that.
Mm-hmm.
22 to 26 foot like mud type stuff. They're just like leaving structure altogether. And we caught in one day, I can't remember how many, we caught like 3 or 4 doing it. And we did it for a couple days when nobody was even seeing a fish.
Right.
And we were thumping on them. And yeah, we were just using the front trolling motor, and we were paddle tails and line throughs. And with like the big Savage Gear sucker, with 70 feet of line out, it was down like 19 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And those fish would come right out of the mud and just swallow it.
Yeah. Which it's funny, a lot of times when you get those bad fronts or the you know, a you hate to, I don't even want to call it, I guess it is a cold front, but it's a colder front, you know, it's already cold and it just knocks yeah. down the activity level of it, and it's counterintuitive for a lot of people. You have to come off the cast and blast, right? Because I think yeah. the knee-jerk reaction, I'm sure you did it. I'm the first one to admit, the first few years of guiding and you hit something like that, you go grab a Medusa or a bulldog and you rip it till your arms fall off, right? And you go, we can't move them, but you can't move them if they're not there, you know?
Well, that is true. But, you know, and one thing, like with working baits, you know, in that, you know, when you do get really cold, I still do like to work a bait, but it's more gradual sweeping type stuff. I'm not, you know, real herky jerky on. I'm not ripping it real hard. Mm-hmm. You see how I fish. I can't just straight wind anything.
He got ADD from hell with the bait.
But I mean, I'm slowing it down. I am still working stuff. But I mean, there is a time, you know, I've had older gentlemen just throw out a curl tail like a bulldog and just straight wind it in.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fish will eat it when it's cold like that, you know? You definitely do need to slow when it does get like crazy cold like that, like you were saying, you definitely do need to slow down your bait type stuff. And I find, you know, the tubes still work when it gets that cold, but they don't shine nearly as much as like your curl tail type stuff or your paddle tail type stuff, it seems like.
Yeah. Which is, it's almost like too aggressive of a fall. You know,
it falls fast. You need a little hang time to it.
Right. Which is, this is, you know, I don't care what you're, not you, but I'm saying the listener, I don't care what the feelings are in scope. The best thing that LiveScope's ever done is kind of show, at least for me, show response of fish that there's no way, you know, it's like reading a follow, but it's reading it 40 feet out of, you know, a fish on a Kraken or a Burbot tube or a Red October, whatever the hell you're throwing. You'll see that fish like instantaneously adjusting its pitch and angle to that bait. And in cold water, you'll see it. It goes up past its face and it doesn't track down with it. Right. You don't need that erratic thing. Like you said, you need that hang so it can make a decision and go, okay, I'm going to grab that. I'm just going to. Yeah.
And I have, a lot of times two people get really hung up in the fall on cold weather. That you have to throw rubber. I've had some really good crankbait bites on cold weather too. Yeah. You know, jointed, it's pretty hard to beat when the water gets really cold, a nice jointed depurator.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or, you know, just, you know, something that just has incorporates a lot of action, but you don't have to reel it real fast.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Well, that's what,
and yeah, like one thing.
That's the only way to get them before rubber.
Fall, yeah. Yeah, and one thing this fall, too, is, like, really shocked me. Is, mind you, like I said, a lot of those fish were up, you know, in that 10, 8, 10, 12-foot zone, is how responsive they were to a glide bait.
Yeah.
Even in that cold water.
Well, that's the one thing. You've got that freaking – you got that sick – talk about that glide bait, because that thing's – I mean, I threw it with you. That thing's battered in hell.
Yeah, so we're going to be launching. It'll be this spring. It's called the Savage Gear Scandal. It's a jointed glide bait, and I hate to let the cat out of the bag, but like this year, that was my 100%. Like I leaned on that bait very heavily. Well, you saw on how the fish reacted to it.
It's stupid. It's crazy.
It's something they haven't seen. It's, you know, and just that side, everybody knows that side to side action with a muskie that, you know, you can turn a negative fish into a very active, aggressive fish pretty quick with a slapping them in the face side to side with any type of style bait.
Mm-hmm.
And that bait is about the easiest glide bait there is I have ever seen to get 100%, you know, that bait just is sideways every turn perfectly. And you can work it super slow. You can work it super fast. I mean, however you want to work it. I mean, it's, as a glide bait goes, it is, I mean, it's deadly. It's, I don't know. I should have kept track how many muskies I caught on them this year. But let's just say I had one rod that bait was split ringed on, and it never came off the whole season. All I did was retie my leader.
Yeah. That's,
I mean, it was, I leaned very heavily on it and caught a lot of fish on it, caught some really big fish on it. It was, I mean, it's a killer. It's definitely something everybody needs in the arsenal. That's for sure. I mean, I hate to say it, but it's deadly.
I hate to give you credit, but it's badass. I'll never say that again. You did okay, Danny. You did decent on that one. No, yeah. I mean, that's the one thing is seeing it where it's just like, okay, yeah, it was funny because if it got in proximity close enough that they even perceived that bait, here they came. Like they had to come look. And I mean, you know, again, give your credit where credit's due. We, you know, I went, well, let me try this over them. And it just doesn't have so it got a reaction. That thing gets a unique reaction. I think a lot of it too is like, you're getting it down to depth, but once you got it at depth, you can kind of hang it where you want it. You know, does that make sense? Yeah. Is that how you're fishing it? Cause like once you counted it down, I mean, what would you say like with that bait? Is it just having the patience to count it down to cover a structure, or I mean?
Yeah. I mean, at times it's, you know, you feel like it's not how you should normally musky fish, but I mean, there was times, you know, I was casting it over 12-foot rock bars, 14-foot rock bars, throw it out, give her a 8-10 count, and then start to work it in. And that bait would be coming down, you know, 6-8 feet down. And I think a lot of it is those fish just have not seen that type of bait at those depths. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah. They're used to that blaring over them.
Yeah, if it's glide bait.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Like usually those deeper type of fish are used to, you know, rubber or crankbaits or something like that. And the thing is it's just, you can work it, like I said, so slow, and it's just so tantalizing that they can't say no. Mm-hmm. You know, it's I don't like to talk about it as much as I am because I don't want it to get out and.
Well, you shouldn't have made it, Dingo. Yeah, it's just like that. I appreciate it because can I get this company to make what I want but not sell it?
Yeah,
there's a trust that, you know what? You know how I deal with that, Danny? Here's how I deal with it. I got a year out of it before anybody else. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
I'm sitting here on the same. I've got kind of some packages arrived for Jay to shoot video of, and I had the same moment because today I just saw him in the box for the first time, and I'm like, "Well, here we go. Cat's out of the bag.
Out of the bag now.
Cat's out of the bag. Yeah. There's no hiding that one. But yeah, that one. Like I said, I gotta give you credit on that one because that. I mean, I love gliders. I've kind of gotten out of the. And again, it's like speaking for myself with scope. When I watch, like, I love watching baits. And that's the one thing is I think it's so important because Danny, obviously, if you don't know, Danny designs the baits with Savage Gear, blah, 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 whatever. But no, I mean, when you're a bait maker, you spend a lot of time paying attention to what the baits do, whether they're just sinking in the water. You know, if you're paying attention to stuff, it's like, what does this do when I'm not manipulating? What does it do at high speed, low speed? I think, like I said, with that glide bait of like, I'll watch, say, a Phantom or I'll watch other baits as they just, no matter what it is, you think it's going left to right the whole time, but they all kind of like nose dive or they kind of like your next jerk kind of trues them back up.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, yeah. And don't get me wrong, like solid wood gliders work.
Right.
But, you know, how many times when you're working one and you get a fish up on one and you want to increase the speed and all of a sudden that bait goes for a nosedive or it goes straight up and then the fish loses all interest.
Yeah. Yep.
That's exactly the thing about this glider is it, you cannot get it to do anything but side to side.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You don't get the ups and downs and the, all of a sudden you jerk on it, it just goes straight one time on you instead of, you know, back and forth. And I mean, and that's the thing with gliders is it's kind of like, you're almost like a snake charmer with it, right? Like you're getting that musky. It's almost like in a trance. You see them like they're just back forth, back forth, back forth. And then all of a sudden you do, you know, a couple little quick ones and boom, he grabs it. You know what I mean? And you got to be able to get that fish with a glider, especially, if you just work it, you know, normal, you'll get some fish to eat it. But you can really trigger a lot of responses with a glider by just, you know, changing your cadence, just like any bait. You know what I mean? Like, it's good to get in, you know, have it, a mental, you know, be mentally prepared to every cast, change your cadence halfway through, speed it up. Slow it down.
Do something.
Two little quick twitches or, you know, everything you throw, you can do that and you're going to ultimately get more bites. Every bait. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. I mean, that's just true as hell. I mean, it's funny when you say, I mean, I don't think there's, because I wouldn't knock, because there's times where I like, you know, like, what are they, hot tails and some other glide baits where I can get that weird stuff out of them. And I think there's a time and a place, but like your bait reminded me of like the same kind of bites and the consistent level of bites I would get out of a manta. And I don't know if you ever threw a lot of like the hang 10 mantas, which
but you can't even,
it's
like,
not a compare
against the manta.
No,
but
I'm saying like
even
how they react. Like the manta is like, you're not going to get left. You're going to get left and right. And you're going to get really definitive left and right, but you're not going to get an up and down. Right.
Yeah.
Where you can, with that style of bait, if somebody's like, okay, point of reference, you can get them to come in on that bait. You know what I'm saying? Where the other stuff turns more jerk bait, but you know, it's that thing's cool. So,
well, and the nice thing about that jointed glider too is you're not really, you know, dead in the water at the boat like you are with a normal glider.
Yeah.
You can still get that bait to do that same action right at the boat in a figure eight.
Do you leave more line out and kind of straight reel it, or you just jerk, jerk, jerk?
No, I just keep popping it and get it to dance, you know, right at the boat. It
now do the production. Like I said, no worries. What?
Go ahead.
What? Did you say your boyfriend's about to hit you? Call the cops.
That's
Danny.
What it sounded like.
That sounded like domestic violence, man on man violence. It's horrible, Danny. You don't have to live this way. Anyway,
wow.
Do the production ones have those swivels for the hooks?
Yep, they all have swivels in them.
That's cool.
They come pre-rigged with BKKs, like all everything else. So
you know what BKK stands for? Black King Kong. I can prove it. I have the Guz business card from freaking Europe. It's literally this. It did ruin it for me, but it made me go, what? Black King Kong is what that stands for. Google it. It's a fact. No, it's kind of weird, isn't it?
those are the most badass hooks on the market.
They are.
You cannot find a better musky treble, in my opinion.
No. That's pretty much what I, folks, if you want to know, that's pretty much what I'm running on everything. Actually, Musky Shop's got the uncoated, just the black, or not uncoated, Jay. The typically they had the orange crap on them, like the fluorescent, right?
Yeah, these are the ones you guys are selling. I think they're like a 25-pack, the super slicks. Those are the really good ones.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm running those on my headlocks now, too, which is, I mean, dude, you want to see some rusty hooks. By the time I go back, it's like, okay, I have my spring trolling run.
Well, you know why they're rusty, Steven?
Because they're not catching fish.
You throw them in the water and you troll for like days on end without a bite or bringing them in. A bite.
We'll get him, boys. Just keep going. No. Yes. No. No, it's just like you store them and I come back and I'm like, I'm so sick of changing hooks. That's my least... Danny, that's my least favorite thing to do, by the way. Just sharing that with you. I'm venting now, folks. I apologize. I'm so sick of changing hooks. Just throwing that out there. So
well, you get. I mean, that is true. You get away from those bronze hooks, and you get to those black nickel and plated hooks. Yeah. They do not rust.
They don't rust. That's the biggest thing. Because I hate, like, you know, I sit there and preach, never fish a rusty hook or whatever. And you're sitting there, you open your stuff, and you go, man. I've said that I can't troll this bait or cast it because it looks like, you know, it's going to give a musky tetanus if I catch one on it. But yeah, those are worth the upgrade. So what else, is there anything else Savage is doing this year?
We're launching a new paddle tail called the RTF Whitefish as well.
Nice.
Kind of a unique, it's a paddle tail, but it's got some unique qualities to it. It's got like an internal harness that hinges left and right.
Nice.
Like a hard harness, like, what's the paddle tail? Like, it doesn't have, it's not soft. So like a swimming dog, when you cast, it won't follow up and it's not like a straight wire, like a chaos that you catch a fish and it gets bent and you have a hard time tweaking it. Like, it stays true all the time. And then it's got, you know, once again, that interchangeable weight system. So you can fish it, you know, shallow or deep, however you want to do it. Comes in two sizes, same with the Scandal. It comes in two sizes, comes in a 10 inch and a 6 inch, both do. So you got your, you know, your guys fishing smaller bodies of water that want a little bit smaller type of bait or spring fishing. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you got your bait size that will fish, you know, all through the summer into the fall as well. So those are the two that are going to be, that we're launching this year through Savage Gear. And then, we got some new stuff, you know, finalizing, that I'll get to fish this year and have a whole nother new can of worms that I can keep under my hat for a year. So
got that 3D gerbil coming out.
Yeah.
Is that, that's in the prototype and testing stages currently. Yeah. Danny Herbeck's 3D gerbil. Sorry, whatever. Yeah.
That is one thing. That is fucking asshole. That is one thing with Savage is, you know, we have like a pretty strict plan, and, you know, we only our plan is to launch, you know, two baits a year, and we already have our two baits that we're finishing prototypes on for 2027 already. So we're basically 2 years out on baits. So, that is a cool thing, you know, and, you know, like I said, with, you know, that Scandal and, you know, like I said, how deadly it was, you know, it kind of keeps me, it keeps you on your toes. I'm sure you're the same way. We all, like, it keeps us evolving, right? Keeps us thinking as, you know, what we need to make on to keep trying to trick these fish. Cause I mean, let's face it, they're not getting easier to catch.
I just do all my R&D by just going by your boat once a year and seeing what's in there.
I see you come in with your phone and you're taking pictures of all my baits hanging.
Just and then
Steven's asking, so when is the launch date on that?
When is that?
Okay, so I know I need to be to market like 3 months earlier than that on my date.
Right.
Ouch.
Just freaking sending your dad down there in the dark and, you know, a ninja outfit. Yeah. What are they working on? Did you do those freaking add-on weights? Was that your idea? I thought it was.
No, that was Matt's idea. I mean, in Europe, like, that's a European thing, right?
Right?
They fish so much, so many like loose plastics that they have all the, you know, free rigging in, and they have all the add-on stuff. That's Mads's idea. That is one cool thing. Like, those Europeans, they are really, you know, into detail. And that's one thing that Savage kind of, you know, is really cool about is, you know, the little detail that we're taking into these musky baits. Cause I mean, let's face it, as musky anglers, we're pretty rude and crude with our baits,
yes,
you know,
in comparison.
Clip them on and they work or they work. But I mean, there's times when, well, you're aware of it, these subtle little differences and changes in baits are, you know, the game changer, right? And that is one thing that, you know, Mads really brings to life and does a very good job is in the detail of the finer points of stuff and just getting these baits, like, absolutely perfect.
I think, I mean, from just a bait making standpoint, and your dad had actually said it to me years back about, like, you, because you guys have the alien eels, and I've always, you know, I've always been a fan of those, you know, and I always kind of thought, eh, those little wings off the side, who cares, kind of deal. And then I noticed, like, okay, I'm typically, if I'm losing those little side fins, I'm not getting as many strikes. You know, and I just grab it. You've been on, you actually sit on my boat where I have like 40 of those in there, you know, okay.
Oh, yeah. I still to this day caught the, I've caught the biggest muskie in my life on an alien eel. I catch a lot of fish on that small little bait. Like it, for a small bait, it fishes big. Like it, it's definitely, I mean, they're, you know, they're a relatively inexpensive bait and they, you know, the nice thing is they're small. They work, like, they just have, you know, a side-to-side action in the water like no other curl-tail rubber does. And once again, that's the trigger for muskies is that bait turning sideways in their face. And it's got that hang time, you know. Yeah. And it's a fish-catching machine, that little bait.
Yeah, it's there's so much stuff, you know, this little it's so funny. It's like when little details matter, they matter tremendously, and then other times, because like you're saying, we can get away with crude, you know. It's like 90% of the time crude is cool, you know. Here's a wooden stick. Here's the first bobby bait you can get. We offer it in natural wood and black, congratulations. But then there's other times where, like, really, it really has to be, because Jay and I have done it before, like, okay, just ripping, like, when tubes kind of first started hitting, okay, we're ripping Red Octobers, and okay, we've got three tentacles left and it's still getting hit. You know, I don't think details mattered too much, right? You know, and then there's
some of the stuff we glued together
just
back
heinous.
When we were running low on the right color, you know. Yeah. they're just getting chewed or just getting used up, and it's just like, yeah, you got that. We were using those torches to melt them, and it was like, oh my gosh, you should have seen some of those things. The aftermath was just awful, hideous.
Yeah,
but you know, and that's the thing too. Like now, once it's just those fish had never seen that profile of a bait, and you know, it was new to them, right? Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that we try, and not to keep preaching savage, but if you notice, all our baits that we kind of come out with have, you know, every fin has like a little paddle on it. It's all like a lot of little extra micro movement type stuff, sending, you know, a little bit different vibes in the water. You know what I mean?
And yeah, they do. Stuff like that. You look at that stuff slow motion, it's impactful.
Yeah,
you can't see it with the naked eye. It's like those little side fins you're talking about. But
yeah,
run that thing at speed, it's like, oh, wow, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Everything is wiggling and moving on it. when, you know, other baits don't have that. And I'm not saying that, you know, at times that does not matter. But at times it does. And I mean, at the end of the day, if you can put everything in your favor, I'm going to get more bites than you.
Mm-hmm.
That's bottom of the line. If I'm, you know, throwing something a little bit better than the next guy all the time, I'm going to get more bites.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, that's the way I look at it, you know, and like I said, their fish aren't getting any dumber. So
no,
you gotta try and stay a step ahead of, you know, of people. And, you know, as a guide like myself, I'm not necessarily always on the water at the most productive times of the days. You know what I mean? Like your average Joe. So I gotta be even that much better. You know, I don't get on the water till 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning. A lot of my days end at 4:30. So I'm missing the morning and I'm missing the evening.
Yeah.
So when do I get the fish? In the middle of the day, typically when most people are sitting back having a beer and a sandwich on their dock.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I gotta be that much better than the next guy.
Yeah. And like you said, why not have And it's almost like one of these things. I had a conversation this week to preface, like, an older gentleman on my boat, and he's like, well, do I need to buy any new baits? Right? One of your typical, like, kind of client would walk into a lodge, Danny, right? He's been doing it for a long time, and he kind of got out of buying baits, say, early 2000. He was like, I have so many baits, right? He's got his top rater. He's got his, you know, he's got his cowgirls.
Double 10.
Yeah. He's got, yeah, like, right, we stopped at 2001, 2002, and he stopped buying baits because he felt overloaded. Where what you said, it's like so true. Of like, and I put it to him, I said, all the fish that you're most likely going to get in front of, right? Most likely that you'll get in front of while you're fishing on your own have seen baits. Because you might not, again, is this guy going to go out there and find the mud line bite? Most likely not, right? Is he going to find, I mean, if you're on the water every day, we're looking for stuff that, like, please give me something that's untapped, because I've just come across, you know, the thing, and I'm trying to make relevant to him, is every fish you're getting in front of seen a bait. They've seen it, right? That, yes, you know, X, Y, and Z, this bait, this diving riser, this topwater, yes, it catches muskies, but they've seen that, and it's not quite as dialed in. And I'm not saying get rid of old baits. I'm not saying old baits are worse than, but it's just refinement of what makes new stuff valuable, I think, now.
Yeah.
Yes, and I mean, you're not solely relying on, you know, the perfect bite window when that fish is going to eat anything.
Yeah.
You know, and when like, and that's the thing, like when the stuff is really paying dividends, is I'm catching fish a lot of times when nobody else is, when they're not that aggressive. It's just that little bit different that trips their trigger. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Like you're saying, you've got to, you're middle of the day. Like, you don't get to go in and have sandwiches when you're doing this for a living. There's no, hey guys, let's go watch a ball game. Yeah, you got to kind of produce. You say that, I'm sitting back here in the bait cave and I'm looking at the wall, and it's like, I'm looking at like one of the older Bondi baits. And I guess to the point of refinement, I haven't made up my whole mind on this, talking to you about it in real time, but like, okay, you look at a Bondi bait, it's a hunk of rubber, it has some impressions on it from the molding, and it's got a blade, right? It is a pretty rough and ready bait in the world of baits. It's a wonderful bait. I'm not knocking it, but if you look at that versus, say, like, what it takes to get a bit on a glide bait, or what it takes to get bit on another bait, if the more pressure there is in a bait class, what I'm trying to get at, the more pressure that there is angling in a bait class, the more refinement you need, which is why we're in the world of, oh, now I need stagger blades.
Stagger bucktails.
Refining, right.
And exactly.
And if you don't get that, if like, it's so funny from a guide's point of view, it's like, okay, I'm refining everything. Now the masses are starting to refine their bucktails, because now it's like, okay, 8, 9. We're talking about what's the company, Jay, that we were talking about their bucktails?
Frenzy,
excuse me. My apologies. Frenzy just came out with a new series. Great bucktails. But 6 years ago, nobody cared about a staggered blade of bucktail.
You didn't need to.
You didn't need the refinement.
You know what I mean?
And that's what I'm trying to beat when you're talking about, what is that? How is that actionable? And what I told that guy is like, okay, I love the baits that he had in his box. I love his cowgirls. I love his top raider. I love his pose giant jackpot. I love this. I love that. I love this. I love that. You have smarter anglers. You have more intelligent pressure. You got scope now. You got all this. And that's where that refinement, I think, across all bait categories matters. You know, even to you and I were talking, and flat out, I've caught fish on Danny's tube and vice versa. You know, he's got some Krakens laying around. I got a Burbot tube or two, you know. But you were talking about, like, even, and I'm not trying to tote Savage gear, but a conversation you and I had kind of off the record, you're like, okay, you're wanting to up some of the colors on those and actually come up with some more visually different color patterns, right? To break that, I think what you're kind of saying, like some wicked collar patterns and like try to break up the visual.
I mean, and I'm thinking that just Well, refining it, giving everybody else a fresh look, and I'm thinking it more for my personal benefit because I know how many fish I catch on them. I know how many fish see them.
Mm-hmm.
I want some different colors to give them a different look.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's mixing up the profile, mixing up the whole... I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I get, and I know your brain's wired the same way, which is like, that's why it matters now is to be competitive and have that edge. You have to be refining everything, you know, yep. From crankbaits. That's something I'm into right now where it's like, I'm not trying to talk my stuff, but I've got a little crankbait coming out. Okay. There's not many softtail crankbaits. Okay. Does it do this? Does it do that? Where like, you know, I'll start talking about it here soon when it comes out, but I'm going, okay, I need a crankbait that has more motion, it needs a different vibration, and it needs to be able to do other things where I need this thing to be able to pause, start, stop, do all this stuff that I didn't need a crankbait to do that 10 years ago. Didn't matter.
Right.
Didn't matter because I was going to get the eating. I made a living on a 5-inch shallow rater for a long time, right? That was my dummy bait.
And what did you do? You just copied a 5-inch shallow rater and put a fish tail on the back of
it? And named it the 3D Shiner. So I called the fun. No, I did. It's nothing like.
I'm always waiting for the smallest opening. You know. That,
I know. Right? No, it's nothing like a shallow rater. But I'm just going to that point.
Just I didn't need that subsurface gerbil.
Subsurface, the freaking, it's the God, I get live target gerbil. Freaking, now I'm going to get a call from Akuma, too. I'm just making them all my Danny Herbass.
Fish Lab's going to sue you.
Well, listen, can we go, Danny, think about this. We can do the first major bait brand collab, right? You guys can produce this soft plastic gerbil. Livingston will put the sounds of a live gerbil inside of it.
There we go.
Couple little tiny BKKs on there so you can feel the nails when it counts. Anyway, God, agree. That's refinement, folks. That's refining a joke. We're refining.
No, but I mean, there are like... You can go as far down a rabbit hole as you want with this, but I see it time and time again, and I am a very true believer in, you know, trying to have something just a little different than the masses of people, whether, you know, and that's one thing, you know, like I have started throwing, we make that teaser leader. It's got a spinner blade on the leader, you know, just something a little bit different, you know, single and like one thing. Now I'm going back into the archives. Like right. This year, I started throwing a lot of big single bladed bucktails.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And had a lot of success on them. Cause you know, bucktail, you know it as well as I do. It is a bucktail probably catches has caught more muskies than any one single musky bait out there.
Period.
And everybody's throwing the doubles,
mm-hmm.
you know? Just trying to be a little bit different than the next guy. And, you know, and you see it, seasonality, you see bait trends. You know, I'm not saying when they're on a bucktail bite, I'm throwing a tube in the weeds. No, it's nothing like that. If they're on a bucktail bite, I'm throwing a bucktail. But I'm going to be trying to throw something a little bit different than the next guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
And, I mean, I think that comes across of, you know, everybody's trying to do that in the modern baits now from where it's like you've got like that sucker prop with the grinder, or you've got like the jackhammer bucktail, you've got, heck, again, we were talking about that frenzy thing. They've got, Jay, what is it, a squeaker or a bell or whatever?
Ringer,
you mm-hmm. know, where it just takes that edge where it's, like you said, whether it's on Eagle or whether it's Metro Water, I think everywhere it matters just because the pressure is the highest it's ever been, you know, and the way I hate to say it, I'm kind of get it through my head. We're like, okay, how many true giants, how many big fish have not been caught ever? I don't think many.
No. No, and I mean,
it sucks.
And
to
you
say.
Said it too before. I mean, the pressure is higher than ever, but it's not just pressure; it's smart pressure.
Yeah.
And I mean, let's face it: if there is a guy, you know, that let's say he's making a trip to Canada, he doesn't have the money for guides. You know, he's got his own boat, he's got his own electronics. If he really wants to find spots without even calling and asking people, it's out there. If he wants to do his research, it's there.
It's there.
I mean, the knowledge is out there for people if they really want to do it, which, I mean, as a guide, it drives me absolutely nuts that it's so easy for some people to, I mean, I don't want to put it like I'm being ignorant, but in essence, steal something that took me 20 years to figure out and run properly. Well, they can figure it out now in 5 minutes.
That's because I've been,
you know what I mean?
Because I've been selling your waypoints on eBay.
I know. I know. I see what you do when you're in my boat.
I've got to buy it now. Danny Herbeck's waypoints, $9.99 a copy on eBay.
But you know what I mean? Like it's out there, and like it's these fish are just they're no matter where you go in the world, I mean they're pressured.
Oh,
and
dude,
that's
the thing is like there's we're getting to a weird spot where and I'm not I don't know if you were around for that conversation or not. It doesn't matter, but like I know of a guy that paid for one of these subscription services, right? Where it was just solely to look at backgrounds. And he's like,
Yeah. And I mean you can
I thought that was cruddy, but I don't know if you were around for that conversation where he's like, oh yeah, I paid for this just so I could. I'm like, oh man, that's kind of dirt. Not whatever. I'm not saying it's wrong, but I'm just going, the information's out there. You know?
And don't get me wrong, if I'm going on a vacation somewhere, I'm doing the same thing.
Yeah.
It's, you know what I mean? Like if I'm going anywhere I go, I'm looking at guides on the lake, what they're doing, you know, looking for any piece of the pie I can get that I can get and to just jump start your trip. And, you know what I mean?
And it's dumb not to. I mean, you said
that's when you pull like, and you know, a lot, and don't get me wrong, a lot of people think that you can pull up to any body of water and be successful. And there are times when you can, but then there are times where, you know, as a guide, it's worth your weight in gold, you know, take the hit on the chin, pay a guy for, you know, a day or two and, you know, kind of get caught up to speed real quick, you know? And that's one thing, you know, I'm sure you're the same way. I'm not holding back on anybody, no matter if, you know, you have your own boat or not. My end goal is to catch fish and, you know, ultimately we're teachers, right?
Yeah. As much
I want my guy jumping out of my boat at the end of the day, feeling like he learned something, you know?
Yeah.
So
that's a double edged sword. Cause there's,
it is.
No matter what you want. You and I talked about this summer is like blood boiling at times, right? And I'll just say something that had an unpopular opinion or unpopular thought. Imagine, let's put it to the average anglers for them to understand. Imagine you take your friend out. All right, jump in the boat, Tommy. We're going out musky fishing Friday night. You come back or you go out with, you catch one and you come back the next day and he's camped right there. That's the life we have to live, right? That's the life we signed up for. You have to think. You have to outfish yourself.
It sucks. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, that's what drives me to be better.
Right.
That's why I'm always looking for the next best thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of times when I go to fish a spot and there's a boat on it, I go start fishing something I never fished before or a spot that I wouldn't normally fish that time of year. And all of a sudden you find a new pattern.
You know what I mean? I know you ran into that this year where you just were, remember, you took me around, you're like, I've never even fished this before. until that. Did you remember that day where like you'd never fished that complex before and you go, there's like six of them using it. You don't know at all. Nobody knows. There's always something else.
No. There, and that's the thing. It's, you need that push sometimes to get outside of your comfort zone and fish new stuff. Because I mean, we're on the water every day. You get stuck in a rut. You get fishing the same stuff because you have history with it. And, you know, you've caught big fish on it. You know there's big fish using it right now. But it pays a lot of times to just go fish something new. Go exploring. And not all of it is good. I'm not saying that every spot that I think is good, I jump on it and there's fish on it. That's not the case. But if you spend some time doing it, you're going to find some new stuff.
Yeah.
It's just getting yourself to do it, you know?
Yeah, finding new fish, finding, you know, I guess the key word of the conversation is refine. You're refining everything, your presentations, you're refining your lake knowledge, you know? Because like you said, in the modern, we're getting to the point, can you imagine? I can't even fathom to be able to listen to a podcast about musky fishing when we were growing up. What?
No.
The podcast was sitting around and listening to the people at camp.
There's free information out there?
What? Yeah, exactly. Right. No, it didn't exist. I mean, you lived through that. Everybody and their brother praying that, you know, they walk into the tackle shop and they pick up a tidbit.
You had to buy the old boy at camp a case of beer and get him drunk before he told you anything.
Or hope somebody had the VHS cassette of, you know, some fishing tactic video out, you know, for your trip, you know.
Sometimes it's a problem of our own making, but it's just the progress, which I think is like ties into, you know, you got to progress with the baits. It's fun. Hell, it's not trying to like recap all the changes in musky fishing, but man, just like imagine Danny, you just took, I was talking about that guy earlier, take a 2002 musky tackle box out on Eagle now. That's all you got. Right? You got a top rater, you got some tens, you got a freaking standard bulldog. You could catch fish, but man, it is not going to be, I don't think it's going to be pretty anymore.
Well, like your dad's tackle box from the 90s, I can guess right now what he, because I started him in the mid-90s.
I have.
Do you remember coming into Gerhardt's and meeting me when you were a little kid?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah. Gerhardt's. How could I not?
Yeah. Okay.
I used to love going there.
Yeah. Your dad took him in.
The big bluegill he always had in the tank. He'd always let me try and catch it. Yeah. I'll never forget that.
Lee took that one home. Lee Talkin. Yep. That thing grew to 12 and a half inches. Kept it. He gave it CPR every night if it got sick and babied that thing. But anyway, your dad, big bull, Magnum bulldogs, black orange, and eagle tails.
Yep.
Am I right?
I'm telling you, when he sold the camp, he had a back room that had about 45 Rubbermaid totes with all like the, and this is like stuff that he had transitioned out of before he sold it. I bet you I have 400 eagle tails, 100 bobby baits. There's probably 200 of the original bulldogs with the 7-strand wire, which, I mean, I know I could go catch fish on those.
Oh,
right,
the little tiny tail ones?
I mean, there is so much of the old school stuff in there, and you'd be surprised. Like every year I kind of look at it and I'm like, I grabbed a bobby bait the other day. In a reef hog last summer, and I was like, I'm going to try this. I put it in the water. I was like, can't do it. I just can't get it. There is no way a fish is going to eat this.
Freaking. It went left, and then it went left again. Two more times. Oh, it almost went right. Yeah.
I'm not kidding you. There must be a dozen orange reef hogs in that one Rubbermaid tote.
Yeah. Which is, dude, it goes to think about it. I mean, if you had to break, I mean, we ought to, you know what? If we're feeling our oats, maybe one day we go and do it and film it where we just take all old stuff and see what happens, right? But
imagine. It would be cool. It would be cool to actually just have like an old school day where you can only throw a harasser, a refog, a bobby bait, a creeper, you know, like all that stuff. And not to say that it won't, that stuff won't catch fish, because I am, you know, like I said, the throwing that single bladed bucktail, like some of that old stuff is kind of starting to turn full circle here again, because nobody throws it anymore.
I'll give you a secret that when I am throwing blades, I freaking throw the Blue Fox Vibrax.
Well, I know that's why you only throw stuff that's easy to throw.
Yes, I'm lazy, but it catches the hell out of fish. Now, they haven't seen one of those in forever.
So, yeah, that Blue Fox, like back when I was little growing up, the harasser, the Blue Fox, and an eagle tail. Those were the three bucktails. Black and orange, black and silver. Those were the two colors you threw. With a glow-in-the-dark twister tail on the back.
I dare you. We can film a video. I'll bring the rods if you want to. Abu Garcia's 30-pound mono musky challenge. What do you think?
Need the 5500s too.
I'll bring them. I've got them back here on the shelf, baby. Frickin', what's the biggest? What are you willing to go, Danny? 7'6" or 6'6"?
I'm pretty good with a short rod. I could probably make it happen with a 6'6".
Let's do it. You know what would happen? One of us will have like freaking T-Rex come into the eight and just want to shoot ourselves. You'll be like, no.
Yeah. What was that rod and reel you used, Steve, when we did that Todd and Dave thing on the water that first time, you know, that tiny rod?
It is back. What was that? That was my mom's rod, and that is a Browning Signaflex with a brown Abu. You know what I'm talking? Ooh. The brown, it was like their high, it was, I can't remember what the gear ratio, it's like.
With a tiny, tiny handle too, right?
Oh, it's like freaking 12-inch handle. I've still got them, still got dad's rods and all that stuff. I got rid of a lot of them, but I still got a handful of like the 6'6"s, 6'9"s, and 7. That would be crazy, but like I said, my only fear is you go out there and you just freaking get in front of a mega tanker with 30-pound freaking Berkeley Trilene on. So, get the cradle, Danny. Get the cradle. Anyway. Oh, well, it's a different world, different day. Anyway, wrap them up, guys. Danny, thanks for coming on. That's pretty informative stuff.
Thanks, Danny.
You and Koopa Troopa, you'll be back in the saddle this summer, correct?
Yeah. I've been knocking on his door here to try and do a little talk with him. And well, you know how he kind of flies by the seat of his pants.
He's
here.
He's a wild card.
I got to track him down. Who knows? He's probably in the Northwest Territories or something right now, for all I know, that guy. So, good talk. I appreciate it. Once again, I enjoy having these little rap sessions with both you guys. It makes me look forward to some warm weather coming up here.
Let's disperse with the pleasantries, please. Good night. Later.
Later, boys.
Night, guys.
Bye.